ladies and gentlemen, to the show that doesn't take itself too seriously, but probably should. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the Fukushima irradiated island change nation in the sunny slave South Pacific, where everybody is employed as an energy saver light bulb. And my very special guest is Joe Trinder. Joe, welcome to the program, bro.
Oh, kia ora, Vinny. How are you? It's
somewhat fabulous is my standard line.
Oh, that's good. That's good to hear.
What have you got for us, Joe?
Okay, well, today what I'm going to talk to you about is the unitary plan and for Auckland City. And what we've got in the unitary plan is what's called a metre, which is option 4 of the new proposed motorway that is going through Mangere Otahuhu.
You mean the one that's not more kind of less like a unitary plan and more like a urinary plan because they're just pissing on the community by building a freaking motorway through it?
Well, that's it precisely, Vinny. I couldn't have put it better. What's going to happen in this option 4 is hundreds of homes, marais, schools are all going to be demolished, and they're going to put a 4-lane motorway right through our community here in Mangere in Otahuhu. For all your listeners that are overseas in the United States, et cetera, who don't know much about Auckland City or Mangere Otahuhu,
it's Mangere kind of like the Harlem. It's kind of like the Harlem of Auckland.
Well, Mangere is located to our international airport, and it's where we have our international airport. So when people first come into our country, they come into our community first. So what it is, it's a predominantly brown community of Polynesian people, Māori, and also European New Zealanders as well. So,
incidentally, a very cheap place to buy alcohol. A friend of mine did a personal survey trying to find where the place you could buy the cheapest alcohol is, and he found it very interesting that it was a neighbourhood of ethnic minorities that were given access to the cheapest alcohol in Auckland. Don't you think that's funny?
Yeah, I think it's a wee bit weird. I'd like to hear more about that as well.
I talked to a woman last night who said, you know how easy it is to get alcohol in South Auckland? I have an $817 tab that I owe to a liquor store. That's how easy it is.
Oh, gosh.
Also, I thought it illustrated it quite well. You know, I was quite a shock when I hear this. And I was just thinking how communities get purposely kind of destroyed. They do the same thing in America. In the projects, they just put a liquor store and a gun store in every freaking corner and boom, everybody's at each other's throats, families destroyed, everything's fracked.
Yeah, well, a good analogy of that you mentioned, Vinny, is we've got fried chicken stores galore in Māori, and we've also got, as you mentioned, the cheapest liquor stores. So we're suffering out of all of this big super city of the new super city of Auckland. The brown communities are having to carry the can for the rest of the super city. So yeah, it's not fair.
Well, I think that all this kind of fast food is actually weaponized. You know, it's got to be. If we were using food as a weapon, could you think of a more brilliant delivery system?
No, I couldn't actually. It's a great way to kill off community. Fried chicken them.
Hey. What's heart disease? Isn't it like the leading cause of death? Second leading cause? Actually, the leading cause of death is the Ministry of Health. But that's just according to the Ministry of Health.
Well, moving back to this motorway, we just had a conversation with the Mayor of Auckland, Len Brown, and he says that he supports this. Last week, what we had is we had a conversation with Manukau Ward Councillor Arthur Anai. He also says that he supports it. And why he supports it is he said to us he wants to keep Auckland moving at the expense of hundreds of people's homes. So,
well, obviously he was interested in keeping them moving because they'll all have to move out.
Well, you're not wrong. And so as he was walking away, walking around way disgusted, one of his supporters yelled out to us, "Buy a car!" Well, what's that going to do to you if you haven't got a home? Yeah.
You sleep in it, I suppose.
Oh, sounds lovely. Yeah. Yeah. How generous of Arthur. Also, what's happened is we've created an organization called Respect Our Community Campaign, and this has managed to galvanize the whole population of Mangere. They're all starting to meet on this, and they're starting to oppose the Mayor Len Brown and also Jerry Brownlee, Member of Parliament Jerry Brownlee's proposal to put this motorway through. Now, what the idea is of the government is they want it feasible for National Party voters out in Botany to be able to drive over the top of our community to get to the airport, so that easier for them to get to the airport. They don't care in the slightest.
It's like a wheeled version of just stepping on everybody to get where you want.
I know. It's terrible.
Well, the thing is, this is not an isolated incident. They do this with motorways all the time. I think there was a motorway being made north of Wellington somewhere or whatever. There's a documentary made about it by Boz O'Sullivan called Through the Heart. And what they do is they come in, and the community would actually think about a particular idea of what would be good for their community. And they do a little bit of liaising with the government. They do a little bit of research. They get some consultation for the community, and they come up with a really good plan. And the government says, yeah, that's a really good plan too. But what about this plan and this plan? They go, no, we don't like that at all. It goes, okay, well, what we're going to do is we're going to word it similarly, make the plans sound really, really similar, and then put it to the public to a vote. And they just use all this manipulation in order to get what they want. Can I ask you a question?
Yes, certainly.
Who certainly is in charge of this particular scenario here in terms of the building by the motorway? It's not anybody by chance who's a paid member of the Committee for Auckland, formerly the Business Roundtable Group, which basically make all of the big contracting decisions in this frickin' city. Costs you $10,000 a year to be a member, bro. And all the biggest banks and everything, and all the contractors and every organization you can think of is a member of it. They run this town.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Vinny. It's what it is they want to tar seal every single part of Auckland City, and it's big business comes first with this government, and what they want to do is they want to build big motorways at the expense of families, loved ones, and communities. And if they tar seal the whole place, then they'll manage to get thousands and millions of dollars in profits. And it's big business driving it. You're absolutely right.
Who are the contractors that are being employed to build this motorway? Fletcher's?
I'd assume so.
You see, Fletcher Building is a really corrupt family, people have been alleging. And I do think that somebody else alleged that they had, I think maybe the government owned about 30% of Fletcher Building. And so what they're doing is they're contracting to themselves at the same time. It's like a mafia. You've got the government on the one hand just sitting there and taking the will of big business and then taking a little cut off the side. It's like taking a snort of cocaine when you delivered a pound and everybody else misses out on the party.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Oh, well, Vinny, I'd just like to explain, just recently I'm running for City Council for Manukau Ward and also for Local Board for Mangere Otahuhu with the John Minto ticket. There it is there. That's John Minto. He's running for the mayoralty race of Auckland City against the incumbent Mayor Len Brown. And I'd like to explain some of our policies that would really upset these big businesses and contractors. What we're offering is free and frequent public transport. How does that sound, Vinny?
Sounds expensive.
Well, when you put it in this terms of putting through a motorway, you're looking at around about $400 million a year just to keep building more roads. it would be a lot cheaper to get everyone on trains and buses and stop traffic congestion than us build tar seal roads everywhere.
Oh, yeah. I do believe this is a good idea. Hey, interesting point on traffic congestion. Do you know why traffic happens? Because somebody hit the brakes. And that's about it. If everybody was just cruising through without stopping, traffic congestion wouldn't actually exist. Isn't that interesting? I envisioned a great idea. You know how all the traffic lights are programmed?
Yeah.
You could actually clear a path for people for significant periods of time and ease the traffic congestion that way. And I've found that all of these little, you know, when you go on the freeway or the motorway or whatever, and there's these little cameras and signals and all this sort of stuff, you know, waiting to go on to it. I remember when I first started driving, none of that stuff was there. Traffic was just as bad. They haven't done nothing.
Yeah, definitely.
What the hell is the point? You know, it's like nothing in transport is being spent on anything freaking useful. It's all about control as far as I've seen it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I agree. Definitely.
I mean, now they're putting up red light cameras. Who's there to testify? What's the legal ramification or basis of that kind of stuff? In the United States, a couple of people have found out that the red light cameras are unconstitutional, violates their rights. There's no actual human witnessing the event. Nobody's hurt. Nobody's killed, you know?
Well, it's revenue gathering. That's what it is. People who can't afford to pay it.
So we're the suckling pig that is being suckled at by multiple large protruding ticks that suck 900% of their own body weight and blood out of the community and then leave you a nice bit of Lyme's disease just to spite you. I see this kind of almost insect infestation of corporate scumbaggery taking over the city, taking over the country, indeed taking over this world.
Yeah, it's the 1%ers that are sucking the 99% of us dry. And it's not acceptable.
How do we fight back against them, Joe?
Well,
with free and free and frequent public transport. Let's think about this. How frickin' cheap is it to make a car? You know, they've got cars that are made out of industrial hemp now. You know that? They got fuel of hemp. You can get like, I don't know, four times or three times as much or whatever out of an acre with hemp than you can with bloody trees or any other forms of crops. I was thinking, you know, it'd be really awesome if they legalize medicinal and industrial marijuana.
Yeah, well,
but you can't do that with a bylaw, can you?
No.
Well, and also the problem is the reaction to the public, because there's always this demonization and history of propaganda against the use of it. It was in every doctor's bag. But getting off topic, in terms of Auckland, in terms of transport, there's also another question, density of population. The frequency of a transport is not terribly useful if it takes like 15, 20, 30 minutes to get to a bus station somewhere. There's a lot of spread out areas in Māngere and all around the city because we've been building out, we've just been spreading out, and unfortunately, they did the same thing in Los Angeles, and the unfortunate thing happens is that nobody uses the public transport because it's really inconvenient. There simply is not the infrastructure or the population density to necessitate them. And so everybody goes to the car. The problem is the planning is not good. Either that or it was deliberately set out and paid off by corporate interests over a long period of time to favour the personal automobile and oil and tyres and the entire industry. This happened in the United States, I believe. many initial suburban settlement zones back in the 50s when the suburbanisation was really starting to kick off, a whole bunch of companies represented by Rockefeller Oil and so on and so forth came in and scrapped local electric train systems, scrapped local tram systems, scrapped local busing, you know, everything. And I probably would say the exact same thing has happened to this country, don't you think? The same scumbaggery forces at work. I see the exact same pattern. In order to reverse this pattern, there has to be a complete overhaul. Would John Minto, you reckon, outlaw this committee for Auckland? Because if I know one thing, I know this. There ain't a frickin' corporate scumbaggery incident that goes on in the city that ain't okayed by them. And that is not okay with me.
Yeah, well, I've been speaking to John. He wants to stop Auckland City being tar sealed. I mean, it's one of the most of a city of its size, about 1.5 million people. It's one of the most tar sealed roads of its type in the world. It's just got roads everywhere, and there's no investment in infrastructure and railway or public transport, and that's why if we were to make it. We'll make it like every public service, like whether you go to the doctors or go to the library, or it's actually free. So it's achievable.
On. Are there any models that have happened elsewhere in the world where they have tried to make for free and frequent public transport with the spread out layout and geography of Auckland and all of the different things that are going on with that? For example, we don't even have a rail going over the Harbour Bridge that cuts off the frickin' North Shore from any kind of rail access. Has there been any examples of this before?
There are. There's two very good examples. One of them
I'm sorry, but we're going to a break now. One of them was Estonia. Hold that thought.
And the other one, yep.
Yeah, hold that thought, and we'll be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, you listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Joe Trinder is my guest from Mana. Welcome back. Yeah. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you go freaking nuts. And my very special guest is Joe Trinder. We're going to talk about some candidates and some policies from the Mana Party. Now, this would be interesting, because I always like to hear about people's backstories and what they're actually, you know. It's almost like you could be forgiven for forgetting there's an Auckland election going on right now. Is there much public interest out there, Joe?
Oh, definitely, it's huge. This is probably one of the biggest local elections ever in the history of Auckland, because it's now the super city, so it affects about 1.5 million people. So this vote here is probably just as important as voting in the general elections for government, because Len Brown, the mayor of Auckland of the super city, the Lord Mayor, is the second most powerful man in the country under John Key. So it's really important we all get out there and vote. Yeah. What I'll do is I'll explain to you some of the cities overseas that have free public transport. There's Chengdu in China, has free public transport. And also in Tallinn, the capital of Estonia, in January this year, they also managed to get free public transport. And one of our candidates, Roger Fowler, he went over to a conference on free public transport over in Tallinn in Estonia. And they had big meetings, people from Chengdu turned up as well. And the economic benefits of free public transport were huge. It injected money into the economy. People were on work to time, were on time to work. There was less loss of production because they'd ungridlocked all the streets. So people who didn't want to get around in cars could just get on public transport, and it saved absolute millions and millions invested back into the economy that they could spend on more roads if they needed to.
So basically, the thing about free and public, basically, the thing about just easing congestion in general is it stops people being delayed in what they got to go and do. Let's say you're a delivery person or whatever, and your job takes an extra half an hour because of frickin' Auckland traffic. Ah, how much more money could you make collectively across an entire city for everybody who has to commute, where suddenly that commuting buzz, that congestion doesn't exist, and productivity is free to flow? The benefits could be unbelievable. Like, imagine that. How, if you, I remember when I used to commute, what is it, like an hour and a half about in a car? And for a trip that should have taken, I don't know, 30, 40 minutes every single day for an entire year. Mate, imagine the savings of time, of money. Because it also burns even extra gas when you, when you're just sitting there idling, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, that's right, yeah. So one of the other parts that we've got to complement that policy is we also want to put free wireless internet on it. So if you're there with your, with your smartphone, and you, you can sort of just go to your favorite websites, it's all free. And so going to work, instead of spending an hour fighting through traffic, trying to get through traffic, you're going to end up at work having just read the Herald and relaxed, and it's an easier day for you because you're not driving, you're not fighting through traffic, you're just sitting on a bus, reading the Herald, taking it easy. And so companies are going to get higher productivity out of their employees as well, who are not coming to work stressed after an hour's battling through traffic. Yeah.
Or late into the office because, oh, the traffic was just terrible today. Because have you noticed when it rains? Whenever it rains, most Aucklanders who normally use public transport suddenly go back to their cars.
Well, precisely. It people are going to turn up to work on time because the ones who do take their cars, they're not going to be stuck in traffic gridlock. And also the ones that take public transport are going to time it better. They're going to know the times of their bus, train, et cetera. So it's really good policy, and I think it's been really well thought out. And I think that...
Talked about these examples like Estonia and so on and so forth. Are there any numbers or figures things of a deeper detail that we can look into these examples? Because if we're talking about time and productivity, I mean, do they know exactly how much they got back?
Well,
per dollar invested?
From what Roger said, the whole economy uplifted. There was absolutely millions and millions. And this is just since January that they started that in Tallinn, Estonia. So we've got an example of a similar size city, approximately about 1 million to 1.5 million, and it's a complete success. And we're choosing not to adopt this. It's just, I don't understand. Why not?
Okay, yeah. So there's the one policy, and there's got a lot of good points in there. What about your candidates? Who else have you got behind you? Because Roger Fowler, I know, was a leader of Kia Ora Gaza for a time. He actually led kind of like a convoy, a New Zealand delegation sort of into Gaza at one point. And who else have you got? Because John Minto's a veteran protester. He's been basically a figure of protesting aficionado since the Springbok tour in the 80s. And then you got Hone Harawira, of course, but he's not running in this local election, is he?
Yeah, no, he's not, but he's fully supporting us, Honey. But I'll explain our candidates. For the mayoral candidate, we've got John Minto, and he helped defeat apartheid in South Africa and the Halt All Racist Tours. So this man knows how to mobilise people. He fought against Rob Muldoon and the national government and disrupted oppression and racism so it couldn't enjoy a mere sports game. Roger Fowler, Roger with Will Ilalia, he helped Pacific Island migrants when the police squad, they had a red squad called a red police squad, they were hunting down Pacific migrants during what we call the Dawn Raids. And Roger was also at Bastion Point with Joe Hawke. He even got married there. And Roger has actually been punched up by Sir Robert Muldoon, the former Prime Minister of New Zealand.
That's a badge of honour.
I know, mate, it is. Yeah. And but Roger's always fighting for the little man. People at Gaza Strip, he's always there fighting for good causes. He's a great man. We also have another candidate, a Samoan candidate, called James Papali'i. In 1981, at the Whole Tall Racist Tours, James stood face-to-face, fearlessly, in full body armour, against the police red squad in a violent confrontation where he stood his ground without fear, mind you. And there's a historic photo of James where he faced up right up to the red squad by himself, just standing right there. And there's tear gas going off, and he just fearlessly stood up to them. We've also got another candidate, Kayla Filimahala. She's a 18-year-old young Tongan teenage girl. And what she wants to do is she wants to help our young people in the community get engaged, because the future of Auckland are the youth, the young people of Māori, Otahuhu and South Auckland. And we really need to invest in them. And myself, I'm the tangata whenua candidate for Māori, or as we say, people of the land here in New Zealand. And I'm of Ngāti Awa descent. And I believe that us Māori, we've got a contribution to make to the super city, and we can contribute as well. And some of our policies that we've got that you would find really good is we want to build 20,000 council homes in Auckland. So we want them to be cheap and affordable. And what this will do is it'll force down all of the rental prices, because here in Auckland, rental prices have just gone, it's unbelievable. It's impossible to live here almost, because the price of housing is it's extraordinary.
Everybody's coming to Auckland. I think it's something like out of 50,000 immigrants we have in a year of a country of 4 million people. That's quite a lot, isn't it? I think about 40,000 of them settle in Auckland, and we're only building about 30,000 houses a year, and there's like a shortfall of like a huge amount anyway. It's actually really hard for some people to even find somewhere to live.
Yeah, the hardest people is on people who are first home buyers. It's absolutely impossible for them to find an affordable house, because we've got very wealthy migrants coming in, snapping up all the houses and not renting them out. They're just investment properties that they get on cheap loans from international banks. So it's housing has gotten out of control in Auckland City especially, and there's no distribution of business across the country.
I think this is one of the interesting parts about this. And have you heard of the Chinese ghost cities?
Heard about one in North Korea next to the border. There's a ghost city.
No. I'm not sure you understand. You know, a city the size of Seattle or Chicago or Auckland or something like that. The Chinese government goes into the middle of nowhere and builds the whole city from scratch. Right? They got dozens and dozens of them. You can go Google search the images on your computer, man. It is freaking unbelievable. They have these massive metropolitan areas where nobody has moved into yet. And I was just wondering, how exactly are we going to solve the population issue in Auckland? We're talking about projected virtually endless growth, but I'm not sure that there are going to be many viable alternatives, because
it looks like the city's being forced into a sort of Agenda 21, sort of pack 'em and stack 'em slave blocks next to bloody train tracks kind of lifestyle. And that's not New Zealand culture, bro. That's just, that's like fitting in with the globalist culture of the world. Everybody's got that kind of sort of thing to deal with now, man. Not in New Zealand, bro.
I'm really glad that you touched on that point, Vinny, because just recently in Glen Innes, they went and demolished a whole lot of state houses where very poor people lived. And so what they could do is hand this land over to property developers so they would have a nice seaside sort of mansion there and stuff. But the thing is, what they're doing with this is they're rolling it out all across the country. Glen Innes was only the first of many. They're going to be doing that here in Māngere. Every single community that's not as wealthy as their own communities is going to get demolished and turned into whatever they want. And they're going to roll this across the nation. And we need to be prepared for this.
Oh, yeah, we do. And people need to watch their local leaders very fracking closely. When Glen Innes happened, you know what they did? They paid them $100, just $100 to come to this meeting and so on and so forth, you know, free booze, free food, whatever. And then it was like almost invite only of all of the little community leaders around the Glen Innes, you know, even the people from Marae and other groups. And they basically just paid them to give them the okay to do it, as long as they'd get a little bit of a slice of the pie.
Oh, were you there and amongst that, Vinny, were you?
No. I interviewed these ladies out in GI like a year or two ago, and they weren't invited, but they managed to get their way in. And they saw this entire meeting take place, and apparently that's common practice as well. This whole fricking country, like, if people fricking knew just how unbelievably corrupt it is. Okay, look, just imagine for a moment that your prime minister isn't actually like John Key or somebody wearing a suit or whatever. Okay, just imagine for a moment. He's Robert Mugabe. Okay. All right. Now you suddenly understand just how corrupt kind of the infrastructure is, the cops on the street and so on and so forth. You know, that's about as close as an example as I can say, because we have a good veil in this country, a veil of officialdom and color of law. These people think that they can get away with things just by telling people that they're an authority figure, and then everybody goes, oh, okay, you're an authority figure. Okay, I'll do exactly whatever you say. You say you've got some kind of statute that I've never seen or never even heard of, and that means that I have to destroy my own home or my business or something like that. Okay, you're an authority figure, no worries. And unfortunately, that hasn't led us into a very good place at all.
Has it?
You know,
people
accuse me of being unprofessional. As far as I'm concerned, bro, the world is currently run by professionals. How's that working out for you?
Not the best, no.
Yeah. No. Some people with some life experience would be very nice. Like a whole group of activists who formed a political party to actually take care. Have you noticed what I know about activists, man? A lot of people don't know what an activist is. An activist is a person who actually takes a personal responsibility for the safety of the human race. And they'd study extremely hard, harder than any university student, for longer. They spend their life at it until they know things that would shock even me. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. And they also know solutions. Back in a minute.
The world we knew is gone. The conditions which framed and taught us our standards have gone with us. Our needs are now different, and our aims are different. The conditions which framed and taught us our standards have gone with us. The world we knew is gone. The world we
Welcome back.
Get down in the Schwarzenegger sense of the word.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com with the music that almost never stops. And my very special guest is Joe Trinder from Mangere. Now, what does the word Mangere mean? Do you know? I don't know.
It actually means lazy winds in Māori. Yeah.
For some reason, having just recently visited Mangere, I think it's a very appropriate name. It was a bit of a lazy wind.
You're not wrong, Vinnie. Yeah. Okay, well, what I'll do is I'll explain some of our policies that we've got for the Minto for Mayor campaign. What we want to do is we want to offer council workers and also contractors to Auckland City Council a living wage of $18.40. And so what we believe this would do is it would show, lead by example, City Council and government. And so business would actually have to give a living wage as well. So then more New Zealanders would start to all get more affordable wages and a better living wage.
Well, you could do that if you just cut out the contractors and then save about half of the loot.
Yeah,
but the unfortunate thing is with council is that I think doesn't central government give them a certain amount each year or something like that? It kind of works like this. Let's say your budget is $250,000 and you spend $300,000. The next year they then fund you $300,000. So basically it's a race to overspend as much and get into as much freaking debt as possible. And the way that they've done this is by getting private contractors to do everything. Consultancy fees everywhere. PricewaterhouseCoopers has made a lot of money. A lot of money. There is a shockingly large amount of people on the take with this particular system that we've got running Auckland right now. If things were done more in-house and paid a living wage, that'd be nice. The old borough council wasn't doing too bad. Before they started the first amalgamations, everybody's rates have gone up. Back in the day, you have a multi-man task force, practically, in a truck, a council worker. Trees down, something else happens, whatever. You call the council worker, he comes out and does it. It's his job, he gets paid a salary. You get a contractor to do something, got to have the contract, timesheets, all of this other kind of jazz, consultancy, negotiation, BS. And it costs a shockingly large amount of money, doesn't benefit the people whatsoever. It's kind of like, what the hell is the point in having a government if you get contractors to do everything? Who then owns the government? It's a contractor's world.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely agree with you, Vinnie, on this, because what's happened in this option 4 of the Metre motorway is central government has dictated to local government, we'll give you so many millions of dollars if you run a motorway right through the middle of Mangere. And so we can't do anything with our local board or our councillors. They can't fight for it because it's the decision's being made at central government. So it's taking the power out of the hands of the people. And it's placing it in with the halls of power. So,
That's an interesting side effect of the super city, don't you think, ladies and gentlemen? Instead of having 9 different local councils that you have to bend over in order to shaft the government's will on all the people, now you've only got one bunch of people to bribe. The bunch of people who are incidentally wealthy enough through the financiers and so on and so forth to run a campaign across an entire city of 1.5 million people.
Yeah. Our next policy that I'd like to explain is Robin Hood rates. So how Robin Hood works, Robin Hood rates work is we live in a predominantly poorer part of Auckland, so we're not a wealthy community. So why should we have to pay the same rates in the super city as somewhere like Paratai Drive that has multi-million dollar mansions and yachts out the front of it? So it's only fair that poorer communities should pay less in their rates and wealthier communities should have to pay more. Another issue I wanted to raise is that because of central government and local government being ignored, Māngere is on the verge of being destroyed and split up into four ghettos on the sideline of a major motorway. So when people go and get their voting papers and they take them off the fridge, they have to think carefully on what extraordinary times the super city is in. And we really need an extraordinary team who have fought against oppression and have stood up to powerful national governments their whole lives without fear, outgunned and outmanned. And that's why we need activists. When these sort of situations are happening, you need your John Mintos, your Roger Fowlers, your James Papales. You need these men in local government to help fight central government, because they know how to fight. These men have defeated national governments before. You'd agree, wouldn't you, Vinny?
Well, I do agree to an extent. However, I fear the corruption of the system tends to either make you leave it or become one with it. And I don't think the activists will fit in nicely, and they might leave. Because there really is quite a horrific system at play here, and I can just see the headlines, false made up allegations, scandals, and demonization, and so on and so forth. Oh, they're wrecking the city, you know, after you steal the election. All of these kind of pompous scum who think that the city belongs to them, rising up against you. And having all the great people that actually supported you and got you into government just sit back and watch. That's my great fear.
Yeah, that they could be corrupted. Well, I've seen John Minto from when he was in his 20s. He was always fighting for the little man. And he hasn't changed. He still is fighting for the little man. He's fought against apartheid. And so I don't see that putting him in a position of authority, he would all of a sudden turn coat and start to listen to corporations and
But that's the thing. Considering he's been elected into an authority, whose authority does he stand under? Is he a supreme authority, a sovereign authority at the point when he becomes mayor? No, he's not. He'll still have to do exactly whatever the central government tells him, wouldn't he? Or would he fight them tooth and nail every step of the way and be prepared to launch some kind of insurrection if he disagreed so strongly?
Well, I think he's more in the insurrection, and he really would. He would take the fight. I mean, you saw him in 1981 run on with a couple of hundred protesters onto the rugby field in Hamilton and absolutely decimate an All Blacks game. So he's more there going to put up resistance. I don't think so that he comes to compromise at all with big national governments. So like our current mayor, Len Brown, who likes to come to compromise, he's prepared to fight tooth and nail to stop anything like this happening.
One would suggest then that probably John Minto won't win. What's he polling? Because the reason why I say this is because elections invariably, as far as I've seen, tend to favour the worst candidate, but the best of the worst candidates. Both sides are usually really, really corrupt. Both sides of the front runners will be really, really corrupt, and they'll be the one that the big business and corporates want. Because, incidentally, it's the upper classes and suburbs and stuff like that that regularly vote, and the rest of the communities who would actually benefit from some kind of person of representative fashion to take control of the city in their name and their benefit. It's nowhere to be seen at the polling booth. That's the sad thing, mate, because the community's down so much and people don't really have the time or the inclination to understand the political game, let alone participate.
Yeah, absolutely right. Well, I think what John's doing is he's going out in there into Len Brown's base. He's going out to the South Auckland communities, into the markets, the flea markets and stuff, and he's really appealing out to those people that are the, what you'd call them, the non-voters. And it's people that, you know, they like what he did in 1981 and the Hotel Racist tours. And those people, the activist-y type, I think those people are a lot of non-voters, and he's got that appeal out there to actually take away Len Brown's base. You are
winning. Well, we should hope so. We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, with Joe Trinder from Mana.
Your weapons are already in hand. Reach within you and find the means by which to gain your freedom. Fight with tools. Your fate and that of everyone you know depends on it.
Women and children, front lines, log on, tune in, stand and be counted. Wounded station in the belly of the vulture. Watch your back, there's no civilians, women, children, front lines, listen. Consider this a distant, early warning. The fire's imminent, pollution, gathering dust particles, funneling through smokestacks, airwaves, bandwidth, disinformation to fed. Check the labels, delete the virus, alert the masses.